Bowman Gray, School of Medicine Oral History Interview, Number 32, with Dr. Charles E. McCrite, Associate Professor of Anatomy. Dr. McCrite is being interviewed by Catherine Davis, Assistant to the Director of the Medical Center. Taped on April 9, 1979, at 9 a.m. in the television studio of the Department of Audiovisual Resources.
Charles, although we're going to begin and really concentrate on the Department of Anatomy and our discussion this morning, I'd like to start out with having you tell us a little bit about how you came to be in anatomy and what your education and background are.
Thank you, Catherine. First, I'd like to say that of all people that I could be interviewed by, Catherine Davis is my favorite. I feel that you are truly Miss Bowman Gray.
Thank you very much, Charles.
About the school than anyone else. I was born in Camden, South Carolina on St. Patrick's Day, March 17, 1913. I grew up in North and South Carolina and finished high school in Lancaster, South Carolina in 1930. Following this, I went to Lenoir Rhine College for 2 years, 1930-32, and then I had an interim in which I lived in Newton, North Carolina, and worked with my family in the funeral business. During this time, I continued studying music, piano, and organ, and I also had a place as church organist at various churches during that interim. With the coming of the Second World War in 1941, all people in my age and category, of course, had to think about military service. So I volunteered and went in 1942 and was in for 3.5 years. I was with the 69th Ordnance Group, 3rd Army, in the European Theater.
When you started back to college then, you went under the GI Bill, did you?
That's right, Great advantage. Much better than the Depression years at Lenoir Rhine. So I got home in December of 1945, just before Christmas. I thought about coming back to North Carolina to school, but I came down, my friends had scattered, and my family were all living in Washington, D.C., and with that persuasion, I went up and applied to George Washington University and was accepted for the fall of 1946. I decided on zoology as a major and finished the degree, the B.S. degree, in 1948. And then with Dr. Ira Hansen, I stayed on to do a master's degree, which I finished in 1950. About that time, Dr. Warren Andrew, who was head of the anatomy department over at the medical school of George Washington, asked that I come over and talk to him about doing Ph.D. work, which I did, and was accepted at that time and began in the fall of 1950.
Was it a little bit unusual to be invited into a Ph.D. program?
I think this happened because several of us who had been friends in undergraduate years were doing masters in various departments, and we kept up with one another, and Dr. Andrew found about my interest in zoology and thought he'd like to have me in anatomy.
Mm-hmm.
And
Charles,
I felt very complimented.
Let's go back just a minute. Was Lenoir Rhine a senior college at that time?
Lenoir Rhine was a senior college.
And you were able to transfer your credits
when I applied at George Washington, I told them I had 60 hours credit from Lenoir Rhine College. I said, how do they stack up? They said, your credits from Lenoir Rhine are good anywhere in the world that you'd like to use them. We have the greatest regard for them.
Isn't that great?
Made me feel very good. Mm-hmm.
Well, I interrupted you now. You were about to enter your Ph.D. program.
Yes. So I went over with Dr. Andrew, who was head of the department, and began the work. Things came along very nicely, but in 1952, Dr. Andrew accepted the chairmanship of the department at Bowman Gray. He had 7 Ph.D. candidates at the time and several master's candidates. There were 3 or 4 of us who were nearing the research stage of our graduate studies and were working under his direction, he invited Stanley Coates and me to come to Winston-Salem and begin teaching in the Department of Anatomy as teaching assistants.
And were you all, the two of you, about the same level in your
at the same
program?
Level, yes. Mm-hmm. So we came down and with Dr. Andrew as teaching assistants, but continued under George Washington University until such time as our degrees would be completed.
Mm-hmm. Well, then when you came to the Department of Anatomy, you were coming with Dr. Andrew, whom you knew and with whom you had worked, so it was not a foreign situation, and you were returning to North Carolina.
It was comfortable in many ways.
Sure, it must have been.
Yes. Dr. Herbert Vann, who for many, many years had headed the Department of Anatomy at the old campus, and who had been, of course, during the 10 years from 1941 to 51 here at Bowman Gray, died in the winter of 1951.
So you never really had a chance to know him?
Not really, but through tradition and talking with all the people who have known him and living with many of his things around the department, I feel that I truly know Dr. Vann in many ways.
It was more than just an introduction to walk into that department, I'm sure.
Oh, yes.
And now, you've heard stories about his being the great disciplinarian and...
Oh, yes.
And many of the legends about
many,
him, I'm
many.
Sure.
The, some of the residents at that time who had been his students filled me in very nicely.
I'm sure they
on the
did.
Discipline. Yeah.
Now, who else was in the Department of Anatomy when you and Dr. Andrew and Stan Kurtz came?
Dr. Dick Grote had been teaching with Dr. Vann and had assumed some of the administrative duties, I believe, too, for the last year or so before Dr. Vann's death.
At that time now, I think Dr. Grote was a histologist, wasn't he?
Dr. Grote was a histologist, and of course he had expertise in neuroanatomy,
uh-huh.
too.
And was Dr. Grote, at that, was histology at that time taught in anatomy, or was this during a time when it was taught in pathology?
No, it was taught, I believe, in anatomy at this time.
Mm-hmm. And then Dr. Grote left the department during the time he was working on his MD degree, or did he come back?
He completed this the same year of Dr. Vann's death, and he mm-hmm. was ready then to go on with his postdoctoral training and decided to go into clinical work, mm-hmm. and so he left in the spring of 52.
So the Department of Anatomy was a newly staffed department, wasn't it?
Yes, entirely. There were no old people left, no former faculty. So when Dr. Andrew came, his intention, of course, as it always had been, was to teach primarily in the gross anatomy and the microscopic anatomy. And he obtained Dr. Norman Salkin from St. Louis University, who came as associate professor and neuroanatomist. Then Stanley Coates and myself worked in the various courses. I taught in gross and histology, and Stan taught in gross and helped Dr. Salkin in neuroanatomy.
Mm-hmm. Well, since Dr. Salkin's name is likely to come up again in our discussion, we might just say that he was educated at the University of Alabama, where he earned the bachelor's degree in 1937 and the master's degree in 1938. Then he went on to State University of Iowa for his PhD degree, and then, of course, came to Bowman Gray from St. Louis University, as you said.
Yes, he had had an interim of 4 or 5 years mm-hmm. at St. Louis before he came.
Now, when you came to Winston-Salem, I'm sure the town itself has undergone many changes, but how were things, and how did you find Bowman Gray and Winston-Salem at the time of your arrival?
I arrived one August early afternoon by way of Greyhound bus from Washington, and I decided to take a nice leisurely walk and find the medical school. And after a little direction from people on the street, I arrived at the long walk over to Ardmore. And of course, experienced some of the hills, the ups and downs between uptown and the medical school. When I arrived, I went, of course, to the main office, and I believe one of the first people I talked to was Catherine Davis. And with the aid of a listing in the dean's office, she and her assistants were able to find me lodging with the Hoots family down on Eden Terrace, where I lived for the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was very fine that I didn't even have to put up at a hotel or motel. Well, there were no motels to speak of at that time except Camley Inn. But
because
anyway,
it was almost adjacent to the campus,
right,
wasn't it?
But immediately I had a place to stay the same day.
And you stayed there for 3 years?
For 3 years, yes.
That's very interesting.
Another interesting event, that night there happened to be a faculty meeting which was held in a classroom on the fourth floor. I came, of course, being a lowly teaching assistant at Dr. Andrews' bidding, and lo and behold, I was greeted by Dr. Carpenter, the dean, who shook my hand and said, "I know who you are." It gave me a wonderful feeling.
That's a memorable thing on your first day in an institution, I'm sure.
I've been at home at Bowman Gray since the hour I arrived,
well,
I must say.
That's really good. Now, you mentioned the classroom on the fourth floor that the faculty meeting was held. Is that what we know as room 465 now? Except it's been relocated a little
just
bit.
Just a bit west along the hallway, but it's essentially the
but
same
that's
room.
And now, about the... Had you visited the medical school before, or were
I
you familiar with
I knew the school since having lived down south, and I remember when it was built and being over at Newton, and I'd never really visited the school in a formal way, but of course I knew of the school and coming over to the hospital from time to time.
Now, anatomy, of course, was on the fourth floor of the medical school building as it is now, but what about the other departments and their locations?
Yes, I think it's important that people know that we had at that time only what we call the original building, which even precedes the gray building, having a long hallway which run east and west. There were five floors of this building, the fifth floor having been completed since the building of the school, I believe, under the auspices of surgery and Dr. Mackey and preventive medicine, some donors there. So there was a ground floor plus five floors. Biochemistry was on the ground floor. And at that time, of course, Dr. Autumn headed the department, and Dr. Swanson and Dr. Laughlin taught in the courses, and Dr. Wolfe was toxicologist. That constituted the biochemistry department. Yep. On the first floor, we had, of course, the administrative offices and the library, and there were a few clinical offices. At that time, many of the clinical offices of those who practiced under the private diagnostic clinic had the offices in the medical school building.
The library took up the greater part of the west end of the building.
With the very comfortable reading room. Catherine reminded me just recently that we're sitting in some of the very comfortable chairs from the old reading room at present, which gives us a very good feeling.
The chairs still sit well, don't they, Charles?
They certainly do.
Then on the second floor?
Pathology and microbiology, which were closely associated at that time, took up essentially the second floor. Dr. Moorhead, The longtime head of pathology, of course, was in his prime and very busily writing a book at that time, and Dr. Pritchard, the present chairman, was a younger professor in the department at that time, and as I remember, certainly Dr. Holloman was here. I don't remember just which others. In microbiology, Dr. Beamer was head of the department, and working with him were the Tuttles, whom we all have come to love and know in future years.
Mm-hmm. Now, the clinical lab, I guess, was on the second floor then, too, in connection with pathology.
That's right, yes.
And the laboratories now for the teaching of pathology, that was at the end of the corridor?
Yes, at the west end mm-hmm. of the corridor.
And the autopsy room?
The autopsy at the other end. And as Catherine pointed out to me only this morning, we can only remember two laboratories which at the present time are in the same positions that they were at that day, and that's the anatomy laboratory and the autopsy room.
Mm-hmm. Then on the third floor,
that was Dr. Green's domain primarily. So physiology, pharmacology, which as the outer day were a joint department at that time, and of course heading up the physiology was Dr. Green and our professor of pharmacology, Dr. Little. This was a very active department in research.
And the other people there at that time, of course, I guess the person we all remember along with Dr. Green and Dr. Little is Dr. Dennison.
Dr. Dennison, yes. An electronic wizard.
Absolutely.
No doubt. Yes.
I can't remember offhand anybody else who was in that department at the time.
There were several others.
It was a fairly good-sized department. That may have been about the time Dr. Truitt was here.
Yes, Dr. Truitt was here at that time. Yes. Uh-huh.
And there were several others in that department.
Yeah.
Well, then we come to the fourth floor.
Well, now I'm at home. That's anatomy. Anatomy, of course, traditionally has been on the fourth floor all through the years. With other departments moving, we've remained fairly stabilized. And as the building is enlarged, we've taken over pretty much other quarters on the fourth floor. But we still have our old original quarters.
And then, well, we'll probably get into that. The department was organized. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then on the fifth floor, that was surgery.
Surgery, yes. And then preventive medicine at the other end, and in between were the animal quarters.
Mm-hmm. Which is a story all unto itself.
Oh, yes.
Well, now, you mentioned the closely knit group that you had in anatomy and how you'd go for coffee, and want to elaborate on that a little bit?
It was a tradition with Dr. Andrew that we all take a break at 10 and at 3 for coffee. So he'd come around and gather us up. Often he'd be making pictures with Ben Martin down in pathology for a book that he was writing. But he'd come and gather up Norman and myself and Stan, and we'd all go to the hospital for coffee.
Now, let me interrupt you there. We all got the impression that the going for coffee, you lined up in sort of a rank order file. Is that did that just appear that way to us, or was that true?
I think it just happened to fall in. We happened to fall into rank. Pretty much.
It was always very interesting to see you going down the hallway. Now, where was the cafeteria then?
The cafeteria at that time was in the kitchen wing of the hospital on first floor. And it was a very home-like place. Virtually everyone ate there who had permission. Certainly all the nurses ate there. The house staff ate there. the faculty had the privilege of eating, and many students, by virtue of holding little jobs in the dining room in one thing and another, were able to eat at the cafeteria too. And
well, now that Old Main is gone, that part of the hospital is gone. But we can remember it as where the old nursing office was most recently.
That's
is
right.
Is that the area that it included? I'd almost forgotten where the cafeteria was. So when you came now, gross anatomy was your interest, but did you participate in some of the other teaching, and what were the facilities there for microscopic and gross anatomy?
Yes. At about that time, when we came, the microscopic and gross anatomy laboratories had been combined in the large laboratory, which ever since has served as the gross anatomy laboratory at the east end of the hall. At the west end, orthopedics offices were put in, and Drs. Forsyth and Young, while very good neighbors of orthopedists and good neighbors at this time, and they were a constant inspiration to the students in gross anatomy for several years. They visited up in the anatomy laboratory, they talked to the students, they gave clinics for us, and now many of the former residents of prominent orthopedic surgeons in this region, in fact, throughout the country.
Yeah, Charles, down there where orthopedics was and where the building literally ended is about where the classroom 471 begins. Is that right?
That's right. Just at the area of the double doors today.
And then, so the lecture hall that you used for anatomy was what we mentioned before is 465.
Yes, and this was held perhaps 75 people. It would accommodate about 75 people. That was adequate because the class in that day consisted of 54 medical students, mm-hmm. and there were very, very few graduate students at that time. Now, of course, this classroom had to be shared with other departments which were not fortunate enough to have a classroom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember a lot of conferences were scheduled there. Well, now in the Department of Anatomy, what about the other personnel?
I'd like to remember several people in particular because they meant very, very much to us. Miss Lucille Brown was our competent and dedicated secretary for several years until such time she married Henry Johnson, who was then a medical student and now for many years has been a local pediatrician. I was pleased to serve as organist for their wedding, one of the first in the lovely chapel donated by the Egbert Davis family.
So what would this have been, around 1953 or 1954?
About 1954 or 55, I believe the chapel was completed in 1954, if I'm not mistaken, and this was one of the first weddings in the chapel. Mm-hmm. Lucille typed my thesis for me, did a lovely job.
Now, we haven't really dwelt very much on your interest in music and the organ, but you have maintained your organ interest and you still play in the chapel sometimes?
Yes, for graduations, for weddings, for various types of small services.
Oh, that's very nice. Well, back to the personnel.
Well, Savannah Williams, one of our all-time favorites. Savannah was our deaner. He had received excellent training under Dr. Van, who in addition to his position in anatomy was in charge of buildings and grounds, as well as, I think, registrar and possibly in charge of admissions. Mm-hmm. Dr. Van had many duties, but he had trained Savannah very well. In fact, he had put him in charge of the cremations, and of course through the years many, many cremations had been done here at the school. not only for material that we might have here, but for people in the city and in the surrounding area, and in fact quite a bit of North Carolina, and spilling over into the surrounding states. So Savannah had the responsibility not only as deaner in our department, but in charge of the cremations. And also, Dr. Vann, being in charge of buildings and grounds, had given Savannah something of a supervisory role over the other janitors, which I think he valued very much, but was very discreet about his commands.
And he certainly seemed to have the respect of the others, too.
Yes, Savannah retired around 15 years ago.
The 1969 annual, Charles, gives Savannah credit for 23 years of devoted service. I didn't remember how long he had been here. He changed so little over the years that he was here, it's hard to believe.
He hasn't changed yet.
Yeah.
This is every once
every
in a while.
Every now and then, I see.
Uh-huh.
That's remarkable.
He weighs slightly over 100 pounds, I would say.
Now, the technical staff, what was it like?
The one that I remember best and would like to mention is Mr. Taylor. Mr. Taylor was departmental technician for several years. A very smart old man. He had taught histology once at the medical school at the University of West Virginia at Morgantown, but of an excellent technician. And his wife, Mrs. Taylor, who was an equally good technician, had a similar position in pathology. And their daughter, Lois, whom we called Patsy, completed her M.D. degree here with us in 1958. Mm-hmm. So we had a very close relationship with that family.
That seems such a small technical staff when we think about the size of the department today, but when we do have to stop and remember the size of the faculty.
The faculty was small.
And that we didn't have a graduate program at that time, so there were many things.
Yeah.
Well, now, you mentioned that the classroom 465 would accommodate about 75 people, but now our entering class size was 54.
54 students, and we got to know each individual very, very well. I enjoy from time to time speaking of these people back in those years with Catherine Davis, and Catherine, I think you know more about them than almost any other one person, and it's very,
sorry to
very
say
good.
The later classes I don't know very well.
To recall these people. But we've always made it a practice to be with our students throughout their laboratory periods. We're convinced that anatomy, particularly gross anatomy, can be learned adequately only in diligent laboratory work. So we get to know the students very, very well. Also, I was fortunate enough to be able to take pathology with the sophomores in 1952 to 53. I'd had the course at George Washington, but it was taught so well here, I wanted to repeat it because it was one of my fields for my PhD examinations, and I enjoyed very, very much Dr. Moorhead's course.
I'm sure that was enjoyable. I hadn't been aware that you did that. That's great. Then the composition of the class, was it mostly males?
I believe it will surprise some people, but in the 1950s we had perhaps one or two, sometimes three or four girls per class. Now this is in contrast to today when girls make up approximately one-fourth of the class.